think they're thinking about their legacy. And they were handed off a Sudan that was a kind of hopeful country in democratic transition. And they're turning over a country that's in smoldering ruins after 20 months of civil war, the largest displacement crisis, the largest humanitarian crisis in the world. So I think what we're seeing right now is an attempt by the Biden administration to put Sudan maybe on a more stable path, hoping that some of the momentum that they breathe into the process right now gets picked up and carried forward in a new Trump administration.
Why didn't Blinken at this time, you talk about legacy, why didn't he focus on Russia's invasion of Ukraine and Ukraine trying to defend itself? U.S. has been a strong supporter of Ukraine through all of this, and the Middle East. Why not focus on that as well?
Well, I think that he recognizes that Sudan could be something of an orphan case, that the Trump administration and those coming in have already articulated a set of plans and priorities with respect to the Middle East, with respect to the war in Ukraine. So those are not conflicts that are going to suffer from a lack of attention from the incoming administration. But I think that Sudan, because it's not a kind of first order national security priority, it could suffer from a lack of attention. And I think the consequences in the coming months from a lack of attention could be catastrophic for the people of Sudan, given the dire humanitarian situation. So again, I think he's trying to, you know, to build some space for humanitarians to have access to the country over the next several months, hoping that that creates the time and the space for a new political process to somehow take hold in ending the war there.
There's been a call by several humanitarian groups for an international presence in Sudan on the ground before any kind of ceasefire is finally reached, if ever one is, because there, as you know, talks have been on again, off again. Sometimes one side meets, the other side doesn't even show up. How likely is that to happen?
I think it's pretty unlikely at this point, certainly given what we know about the incoming Trump administration's views on UN peacekeeping. You know, in the last Trump administration, they were trying to cut peacekeeping budgets and limit U.S. support for peacekeeping. I think we have to expect that to continue. Certainly, I think it would be hard to imagine creating new peacekeeping operations. I think the UN and others are just trying to keep their head above water and maintain the peacekeeping operations where they are already deployed, places like Eastern Congo or even Haiti. So the idea of standing up a new peacekeeping operation when African governments themselves have yet to kind of raise their hand and commit troops to that kind of exercise feels very unlikely given the incoming administration.
You were in East Africa not that long ago, and you got to meet with some officials in that region. What was your takeaway with the situation in Sudan, the political aspects of any kind of possibility of a ceasefire and things getting better in 2025?
Well, I was actually surprised talking to Sudanese army officials, the kind of consensus that there needs to be an end to the war and that there likely isn't going to be a kind of battlefield victory that is definitive in a way that would prevent the RSF from posing a threat into the future. So they recognize, I think, that there needs to be an international process guaranteed by the international community, enforced by the international community, for there to be lasting peace in the country. Given that recognition, you know, you're hearing both sides essentially say that they're not ready to stop fighting. But I think that there's room for a deal to be made here. I think that 20 months of fighting and destruction has created a lot of fatigue, not just among the warring parties themselves, but among the neighboring states. Many countries like the United Arab Emirates have taken a real black eye in the international media for their support for this war. I think other neighboring states like Chad and Central African Republic recognize that while they are profiting from the war, that it's destructive for the region. And I think everybody recognizes that countries like Iran and Russia are probably the big winners in all of this, profiting the most, having their diplomatic credentials burnished in the region. And that's probably not good for the countries in the region. So I think as this has dragged on, I think more and more we see that there has to be some way out that's not military, that is a negotiated settlement. Putting all these pieces together is going to be the tricky diplomacy that's required.
Many analysts and lawmakers have said that one of the keys to getting this resolved is getting the UAE out of the picture and stop propping up one side. And they're accused of propping up the RSF, although they deny it. Is there any movement on that ground that you saw while you were there?
Well, no, not really. I think that the UAE, because they continue to deny any level of support to the RSF, doesn't open up the possibility for a constructive conversation about what would be necessary, what they require to see in Sudan, to give them the assurances that they need that their interests would be protected. They're clearly under the impression that only the rapid support forces are going to protect their long-term interests in Sudan. I think they have to be disabused of that notion that whatever their interests are, whether they're financial or political or strategic, that some successor regime other than the RSF will be able to take their interests into account in governing the country. But I think until they feel that, they're not going to relent in their support to the RSF. It'll be interesting to see if the Trump administration has any new leverage over the UAE that the Biden administration wasn't able to muster themselves. I think these are big questions right now.